You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It was really interesting that on Facebook today a memory came up, and it was where in 2016 we were saying at the time there was a photograph of a can of fly spray, and that the ingredients of fly spray were the ingredients that could set off the meth testing. Excuse me. And at the same time, Fair Go had tested the $20 notes in general circulation and came up with a higher test on those $20 notes than what was being used to evict people from their state houses. But we knew back in 2016 that this was bogus, and it's only under the Labor government that they have that they asked the science officer who confirmed that these tests that were being used were actually designed for, if there was a pea house, a pea lab, and it was cleaned, that to prove that it was clean, if it had this level of testing, it meant that that was then a safe environment. So we were using something that proved a pea lab was safe after cleaning to say that people had been using pea, smoking it in houses, and many, many, many of these people are going, what are you talking about? Must have been previous people, or there's no way it was me. There's no way I do that. There was one woman who had them test her hair to prove that she had never partaken of pea, because that's a genuine test, because otherwise she could have possibly have lost her daughter and had her taken away by SIFs.
Mm.
So the damages to these people were much bigger than just losing their homes. That in itself is big enough. There were other people who, while they were away, had all of their possessions, including wedding albums, removed and disposed of because of this bogus test. And what we're saying from State Housing Action Network is we're saying that these people need to be compensated. Mm. There's a lot they need to be compensated for. They need, first of all, an apology for the stress and hurt and humiliation caused by this bogus test. They need substantial compensation for illegal disposal of those possessions. They need repayment of any money that they had to pay to Housing New Zealand for the meth testing in the first place, and the mediation carried out under these false standards. They need repayment of the rent that the private sector would be charging them after they were removed from a state house, because state housing has income-related rent. They need compensation for damages, for stress and hurt, and humiliation. Gosh, they're having trouble there with my words. There's also exemplary damages. You know, I looked up the definition of that, and it's just perfect. It says these are damages that need to be awarded when the defendant's willful acts were malicious, oppressive, fraudulent, and grossly reckless. And that's exactly what this testing was that Housing New Zealand used under the national government. We also want these people to be placed on the Housing New Zealand priority list for a state house in a mutually agreed area, and for Housing New Zealand to apply to the Tenancy Tribunal to quash any tribunal decisions relating to the tenant. So, you know, they've got their record stained as a tenant from this. That was a whole lot of rubbish. And they may have had legal expenses incurred, and that rent that they need to be compensated for is until they get to be back into a state house again. You can imagine how that would be to lose your home in a time of such immense homelessness. and to be falsely accused of something that they had nothing to do with.
Can you go into a little bit more detail about how the Residential Tenancies Act was breached?
Sure. So first of all, a very important part of the Residential Tenancy Act is for tenants to have quiet enjoyment of their property. So by using this false situation, it means that these people were not able to quietly live in their own lives in their own houses. And that's a really important factor that needs to be considered when these sort of investigations are done. Now, under a national government, there was also the 2015 Social Housing Reform Act. Now, that act had a series of punitive ways to, in my opinion, try to remove tenants from state housing. You've got to look at the underlying of all of this. Why would a government, and that's the previous government, the national government, why would they be wanting to push tenants out of state houses? Why would they not be finding out if this testing method was actually scientifically viable? And the reason behind it is that they were wanting to sell off as many as possible of our taxpayer assets, and that is the state houses, but even more important in value is the land. In my opinion, this is a huge land grab that happened where National were trying to move taxpayer assets into the hands of private developers. And they did so in huge ways. On the 1st of April, which is the most awful time to do it. I mean, it's the beginning of the new financial year, but it's a huge April Fool's joke, and unfortunately many people suffered from this. But in 2015, on the 1st of April, under the national government, 2,800 properties, state-owned properties with state houses on them, were transferred from Housing New Zealand to the Tamaki Redevelopment Company in part of their regeneration. Now, there's a whole other thing about how that's set up, but I won't get into that because that's another can of worms in there. But these houses and $252 million were transferred to basically a development company whose purpose was to remove tenants and demolish houses. Now, prior to that, they had a guinea pig lot of 156 tenancies where people were given 90-day notices. And prior to that, people were in state houses for life. That's how it was set up. It was set up after the Second World War where, like, my dad came back from fighting for his country and he was given an option of a cheap state advances loan or a state house for life at a fifth of his income. He chose the state advances loan. Many people chose state housing. And then all of a sudden they were given 90-day notices in a house that they thought they were going to be in for life. And out of the first 156 tenancies that were given 90-day notices, more than 25 people died. Now, these were elderly, these were ill people, and sure, their lives may not have been that much longer if they hadn't had the stress of being pushed out of their houses. But I've been asking, I've been speaking about this with Phil Twyford, with many people for many years, saying I believe there needs to be a coroner's inquiry into those deaths. Are the number of deaths that occurred disproportionate to what they would have been if these people hadn't been pushed out of their houses? Now, okay, we'll get back to the meth houses and the non-meth houses, should I say. These people weren't necessarily the elderly people that have been pushed out of those other ones, but that doesn't stop the amount of stress that it actually causes on people. So what we want is we want Housing New Zealand to be returned to a government department. we want compensation through the list that I went through before for these people that have been falsely removed and falsely accused and have got the stain on their reputation. We've been calling for the resignation of the CEO of Housing New Zealand at the time. He's had one little statement about it, but this was under his watch. It is his responsibility to make sure that this punitive behaviour doesn't happen to his tenants. And basically, they need to get their heads out of the scheme that they're on, and they're still on the same scheme under Labor, and that is a scheme of removing tenants, demolishing perfectly good state houses for their rebuild program. Now, I have 30 plus years architectural experience, and I can tell you that demolishing these very good state houses, the best built houses in that time in New Zealand, that have got another 100 years life in them, to demolish these houses, to rebuild in, under the new building standards, which is for a 50-year life, when those houses have got at least 100 years left of them, that is a really unthought through way of transferring a whole lot of state land again into private ownership. We should be building state houses, and we should be building them around the existing state houses. I did a little calculation on the how much it costs to demolish a state house. First of all, when there aren't enough houses, you're moving one house backwards every time you demolish a house. Then there's the value of the house, which has a book value of around 200,000 each of these state houses, depending upon where they are in the country. To rebuild it costs another 400, but that state house would have lasted for another 100 years, and the new house has got a life of 50 years, so you've got to rebuild it again for another 400. It's costing you $1 million as a taxpayer for every state house that's been demolished.
Wow.
And I've talked about this with Phil Twyford. I've had private meetings with him where I've taken architects with me to discuss this, and I just think that, sadly, we're in the situation where it hasn't stopped, and the state house tenants that were being victimised under National for transferring this land into the hands of the rich and developers and selling them off, that under Labor, what's happening is that those people are still getting pushed out to build only a replacement or slightly more than the number of state houses in the first place. And now it's been given away to middle New Zealand, middle young New Zealand, as affordable housing, or under the Kiwi Build program that Phil Twyford talked about as allowing these young people to be on the property ladder. We shouldn't be building property ladder. We should be building homes. We should be building homes that people can be in securely and know that their children can go to the same school for the whole of their schooling life. We should be changing the Residential Tenancy Act and having it so that people aren't pushed out on a regular basis by private landlords who know that each time they push out a tenant, they can get more rent from the next one, and that rent is becoming unaffordable for all New Zealanders. The whole sad system is broken, and this bogus P-testing is a thing that's bringing so many of these things to light. Mm. Sorry to not let you get a word in edgeways.
No, it's better to hear what you're saying.
I'm extremely passionate about this. I just think that people need to be able to live in a secure home. Other countries in the world have solved this in their own way. For example, in Germany, after the war, again, the Second World War is the thing that changed things. So in Germany, people have tenure for life. They can make alterations to the home that they're in, treat it as their own home, paint it whatever colour they like, put in a new kitchen if they want to. They have a restricted amount that the rent can be increased on a yearly basis or a two-yearly basis. And it can't just be blown all out of proportion and like it is here. I mean, sure, their houses are owned by big corporations, but we have the equivalent of that. It's called Housing New Zealand, and it used to be a government department. It needs to go back to being a government department. And I've also suggested to Phil Twyford, Jacinda Ardern, you name them, in the Labour Party and in the Greens, I've spoken with when they were campaigning about how I believe that this could work so much better for our country, where we have lots more state houses, where we have, as a subsidiary to Housing New Zealand, we have something, I mean, I made up a name, Housing New Zealand Build, where you have mastercraft people teaching apprentices, and they are doing all of the repairs and maintenance on the existing state houses, and they're building more state houses. We have a huge portion of our population who cannot afford rent out in the general market because we have this hugely inflated price of land that is absolutely ridiculous and got nothing to do with reality. And the social value of the land that is owned by the government under Housing New Zealand is huge, and that's the real value of it, not the so-called monetary value.
Just one last question I have is, what was Phil Twyford's response to you and all this discussion that you've brought up with him?
Right, okay. So his response was quite different prior to election. Prior to election, he was talking about agreeing to put state housing back into put Housing New Zealand back into a government department and be talking about state housing instead of social housing, because state housing is public and social housing is privately owned for profit. So his vernacular went back to talking about state housing. Since then, he said it's more complicated to put Housing New Zealand back into a government department. I don't know what that entirely means, but that's what he has said. When I talked to during election campaigning, when I said that rather than doing these developments and selling the land with it, that if the government kept ownership of the land, then you could truly build affordable housing for people, and it would mean that the house would retain its lower affordable value if the land was still kept in state ownership, and that was the state's investment in those properties that were affordable. So effectively, you build state housing. Some of that state housing is available for sale as an affordable house, and that the land is still kept in a lease to the government. When I suggested that, he said, good idea, Gail. But none of that's happened. I don't know what's the difference between what you campaign on and what you're able to do once you're in power.
That is quite unfortunate.
It is. It is. I mean, it seems like it's the same thing in some ways with a slight different twist to it. So the state houses were being demolished for the land for the rich people under a big land grab under National, and now under Labor, the same thing's happening, but it's not the rich folk that it's getting it. It's the young people who can't buy housing, and that's terrible that they can't buy homes. But it's also going to private ownership, and some of that private ownership under what is being called Kiwi Build, the levels of income that you need for Kiwi Build. I mean, I also run a Facebook page called Save Our State House Homes, and I did some research and I looked at what you would need in an income in order to be able to afford the 120 for a single person or 180 maximum income for a couple for the Kiwi Build. And you can't do that if you are a nurse, a teacher, a fireman, all of the a builder, an electrician, all of these people, you know, in the trades, let alone in incomes below that, there's absolutely no way as a young person in your first 5 to 10 years of working that your income is at a level of being able to afford a Kiwi-built house. So who are they for? So they're for people that have got the higher income. So to put them onto the, excuse the term, Phil Twyford's quote, property ladder, what, the next lot of rich people are the ones that are being serviced now under Labor, when under National it was just blatant to the rich folk?
Mm.
Yeah, I just find it criminal. We forget it's not just children that are in a situation that need to be taken out of poverty. It's their parents, it's these families, and it's not just families. There's many single people as well. You know, let's not, with what we're doing, punish the people who haven't managed to find their mate for life or haven't had children. There's a variety of reasons that that's the case. So let's not punish the single people in this as well.
Mm. Just to close things off, are there any other comments that you'd like to make?
You can see in there that I've actually opened up a big can of worms.
Mm.
That's a whole big subject. You know, I believe in this picture that we need a rental tenancy movement when we have 60% of our population now in Auckland alone are renters. There needs to be protection for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I say them, that's us. I really feel for these people. The work that I've been doing to help state house tenants and to help the homelessness has come from being pushed myself and proving them wrong and appreciating that other people may not necessarily have the skills to speak for themselves. And that's the biggie, is that we have the sleeping giant of voters as well in the, it was 69,000 state house tenancies before National got into power. I think we might be down to something like 64,000 tenancies. That's, you know, often two adults, two voters in this. Think about the voters if those people actually got out and voted. And unfortunately, they're feeling so oppressed that they don't necessarily vote.
It's completely heartbreaking.
Thank you for your compassion.
No, absolutely. You have to feel for everyone in terms of the housing crisis at the minute. It's so hard.
Well, I mean, you know, just look at your own situation and knowing what level of rent you're paying and what level of your income it is. And, you know, the income-related rent in state houses is based on a quarter of that tenant, a quarter of their income up to the level of a pension. Then it's half of their income after that. So you know, a pensioner, quarter of their income. If you are on an invalid benefit, you get $100 less per week than a pensioner, quarter of your income. If you're on the other benefits that they're calling work seeker, which is sickness or solo parent or actual work seeker, then that's $60 a week less their income as well. So, you know, if you know anyone that's on a pension and you see their difficulty in surviving if they don't own their own home, is even more so, and you can go, well, an invalid less and anyone that's on a sickness benefit less again, and you can see how that is actually so making a whole other level of poverty of people that may actually be homed.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.